Today I'm going to lump together some of our sermon discussion with the topic that I'm introducing for today. Afternoon times, I've taken up the broad subject of biblical answers to everyday problems. And the little booklet that I've chosen today is called Authority Issues. I mentioned that there's some new booklets that have come out. I've only got one, so this is another one that I'll share around if you're interested in looking at it. The subtitle is When It's Hard Being Told What to Do. What's the picture on the... Well, I must have hit a nerve.
Whatever.
I said whatever? Oh, she said whatever. I'm gonna turn off the tape recorder for this session. All right, I think so. So what's the picture of? Then we ask the kids. Can you tell what's on the cover there? It's a rope, yeah, but what's wrong with the rope?
It's all tangled.
Ah, it is all tangled. Why do you think they would have a picture of a rope all tangled up on for this subject? Yeah, this can be a hard subject and one that it's hard to untangle. If you've had a rope or yarn that's gotten all tangled, you know that it's hard to get untangled. And this is a subject that can be hard to untangle. To introduce the subject, I want to broaden the scope from what I was looking at this morning. I introduced it from Ephesians chapter 5, and especially the relationship of husband and wife. And that's where we'll be the next couple weeks in sermons. But authority is something that's broader than that. That was part of my intention this morning, was to help you to see the broader principles of relationship to authority that Ephesians 5 draws in. So to introduce that, I want to ask you what relationships that you are either in or that you observe in the world around you where you can see that you are either under authority or in authority.
Under authority at work.
Mm-hmm. How many of you have a boss at work? How many are you the boss at work? Oh, some of you are the boss. Some of you have authority over your business, or some of you are under authority in your place of work. I'm going to imagine, though, that even at work, that you might have some level of authority or responsibility. I know, Victoria, you have a certain level of authority in your work, right? Who are you in authority over?
Well, I'm the lead teacher, so all the assistant teachers are
underneath
me.
Yeah.
So if things go wrong, I'm the one who gets blamed for it.
That's right.
I have authority issues.
I shouldn't fight them here.
You have a lot of ropes that are knotted up. Yeah. What are other relationships in your lives that could have elements of authority in them?
Civil.
Okay. You are all citizens of the United States. So you have, you're under the authority of the President of the United States and the Congress and the laws that are established, plus their local leaders, mayors, the state of Oklahoma, city of Stillwater, all of that. You have a relationship of being under their authority. What else?
Student professor.
Yeah, that's a very key one for our congregation, is because there are so many of you that are students, whether that be students at Oklahoma State or homeschool or Christian school. You have a relationship of students to teachers. That's right. Parents and children are in a relationship of authority and being under authority. And the one that I mentioned this morning, husbands and wives, those are the major broad categories. There are some other smaller ones that are could be subsets of some of these larger ones as well. Thank you. I meant to bring that up as well, that that in the church that there is a there's authority in the church as well, and the vows that you have given as part of your covenant of church membership says that you'll respect the elders of the church, you'll respect the leadership, and if they come to you in counsel, that you'll listen. So lots of different relationships. Just to take this a little bit further, I've already gone down this road a little bit, but you are experiencing both of those situations, many of you in your lives, that you are both under authority and both exercising authority at the same time, maybe not in the same relationships, but there are, you can see why it gets to be kind of a knotty, or has lots of knots in the issues, just because it can be very complex. Now, think about being under authority. What errors in leadership have you observed that make it hard to submit to that authority?
You may not know all of the information to a certain situation.
Yeah. Maybe acting without the complete story. Meg?
I was asked to do something wrong.
Mm-hmm. Ed? It's possible that the person that's in authority over you asks you to do something that is illegal or immoral. That's a very real possibility. What do we do in those circumstances? Well, we'll be talking about it. What are some other things that make it hard?
The inconsistency of requirements.
Yeah. Today it's one way, tomorrow it's another way. What's expected?
Unfairness.
Mm-hmm. Another coworker is treated different than I am. Here are some things that the author, Robert Smith, lists. You've hit on several of them. The authority is unreasonable. The authority is wrong. The authority doesn't understand. The leadership is inconsistent. Doing it the boss's way will lead to failure. Submitting will ruin my schedule. The authority doesn't practice what he preaches. He has no integrity. The authority is unqualified. I respect the rank, but not the person. The authority acts like a dictator. And those are just a sampling. Smith goes on then to ask a question, what are your responses to errors in leadership? And they can be either, you don't have to say, I've done this, but you may say, I've observed this, or you can leave it blank. We won't assume that this is your response. What are some typical responses to those who are under authority when those in authority make it difficult?
Assassination.
Have you done that, Dave? I know.
Successfully.
that has been a response. What else?
Grin and bear it.
willingly or unwillingly sometimes.
Holding grudges.
Yeah.
Undermine the authority by going to everyone else who's also under authority.
Yeah.
He did make a mistake on purpose.
Right.
Could form the boss too if you think they're wrong.
Mm-hmm. Good. Again, I'll just read some of the responses that Smith gives, and you've hit on several of these. Feeling sorry for myself. Focusing on my, quote, right to be treated better. Gossiping. He puts in parentheses, sometimes in the guise of prayer requests. Complaining. Getting others to agree with me, gaining a following. Adam was kind of going down those lines. Offering token submission, just enough to get by and avoid serious consequences. Withdrawing. Becoming bitter. Holding a grudge. Just plain resisting. Ignoring instructions. Getting angry. Arguing. Getting even. Doing it my way. You can probably think of examples yourself, but here are a couple examples cited by the author Robert Smith. My platoon sergeant did it again. I wish John were here to confirm this. We were done with the day's training at 1400. I thought we would go home early, but we had to stick around until the closeout formation at 1645, quote, just in case something came up. Why do we have an alert roster? He could have activated it so we could get all the information that was put out. With deployment coming up, it would really be nice to hang out a little bit before we have to go over there again. Yes, have you ever had a day like that or a time like the following? Here's another person's submission. He did it again. How does he expect me to make this work happen when he keeps changing his mind about what he wants? Last week he insisted that we complete this procedure in 7 minutes. Today he raked me over the coals in staff meeting because the procedure wasn't thorough enough. He said he thought it was obvious that a 7-minute procedure wasn't enough time to get the results we need. Once again, I'm made to look like an idiot for following his instructions. With those examples in mind, I want to begin today by looking at a biblical view of life that leads to several important applications in this area of our relationship to authority. You'd probably all agree that that submission to good leadership is can be difficult too, but it's easier when the leadership is good. But that it is especially hard to submit to poor leadership. And part of my hope is that we would untangle our attitudes and some practical responses when leadership is poor, rather than just looking at our responses when leadership is good. First place I'd like to start is to remind you, as we've demonstrated earlier, that your whole life is a mix of relationships in which you are either in authority or under authority. And again, as I said, you're probably in a mix of different relationships. This morning I made the point that's part of the way God made the world and how God created us. We looked at Genesis chapters 1 and 2 this morning, and we found that God is the one who set mankind initially in a relationship to himself under his authority, so that we have that primary area of submission to him. But then God also set mankind in relationship with each other. He instituted marriage, family, the state, and all of those are involving some relationship of authority. One conclusion that we draw from that is that authority isn't evil. It's part of God's good creation, and so we have to acknowledge that authority in and of itself is not evil, but that it can be used for evil purposes. Which is a second point that I would hasten to make, is that sin has indeed corrupted the world and all of the good things that God has made. Sin affects those who are in authority. And when I ask for some examples of errors that leadership makes, some of those are plainly sinful. If they require you to do something that is evil, that is sin. If they lie about you, that is sin. So authorities can indeed sin. But I would also have you notice that sin also affects those who are under authority too. But I guess it's probably easier to recognize it in someone else and to recognize it in the boss than it is to recognize in yourself, especially when you're the one who's been offended. But you should also recognize that you can sin. In fact, in the responses that you gave earlier, responses to errors in leadership, many of those responses were sinful responses. Getting even or carrying a grudge, becoming angry. Those are sinful responses. So recognizing that you also sin in this situation is important in untangling some of the thorny issues of relating to authority. Thirdly, Smith makes this point that I thought was really good, and one that I was hoping to make this morning, is that submission itself is a required way of life for believers. We can start with the model of Jesus Christ. I have several verses here that come from Christ that describe his relationship to his Father that I'll hand out. Could I have a volunteer take John 6:38? Vicki? And Sam, I saw your hand too. You can take John 8:29. If I could have one more volunteer. I'll wait on that. I'll come back to that. So let's hear John 6:38 first.
For I have come down from heaven not to do my will, but to do the will of him who sent me.
Who is speaking and of whom is he speaking?
Jesus is speaking of God.
Right. Speaking of his Father. He came to do his Father's will. In John 8:29.
For he had come... shows his authority over kings.
Ah, well, it would have fit there too, but...
29?
Yeah.
And he who sent me is with me. He has not left me alone, for I always do the things that are pleasing to him.
And who is speaking and of whom is he speaking?
Jesus speaking of his Father.
Yeah. This morning I also looked at the Garden of Gethsemane. And the demonstration of submission there. Would someone put that in your own words? How did Jesus show his submission to the Father on the Garden of in the Garden of Gethsemane?
He didn't want to do it, but he was willing to follow God's will.
Paul says that that Jesus, who knew no sin, became sin became the sin bearer and then the wrath bearer for us on the cross. And anticipating that, Jesus prayed, not my will, but your will be done. As followers of Christ, we are also called to submit to the authorities that God has given us. And that's the fourth point that I would make this afternoon, is that not only is it a way of life, but it is required, even if the authority is faulty, with this disclaimer. The disclaimer is important. An authority over you can never require you to sin. If they do, you must obey God rather than man. But in many situations, God still calls you to submit, even though it is to frail and sinful leaders. That doesn't mean that another disclaimer here, that doesn't mean that you necessarily stay in a job where you have an ineffectual, broken leadership structure. There's opportunities within your job, especially to appeal to those in authority or to seek out other jobs. God does still call you to not sin in your response to the sinful responses against you. We can demonstrate this from several very searching passages that we have in Scripture. So I have three more passages that I'll ask for volunteers. Volunteer to read 1 Peter 3:1. Bridget? Matthew 22:21. Adam? And Romans 13:1-2. Matthew? Sorry, Henry. Let's start with 1 Peter 3:1.
Wives, likewise, be submissive to your own husbands, that even if some do not obey the word, they, without a word, may be won by the conduct of their wives.
I cited this one because of the relationship of husband and wife, where in this case, what is the character of the husband? Anybody? They are unbelievers and are disobedient. Not only unbelievers, but they are described as being disobedient to the word of God. And what Peter says to wives there is to be subjects to your own husbands. That bond and that relationship has not been dissolved. It still stands, and God still has a purpose for that. We'll be developing that in the next coming weeks. How about Matthew 22:21?
The context on this is that Pharisees are asking Jesus if it's lawful to pay taxes to Caesar. And he says, he asks them whose likeness is on the coin. And he says, Caesar's. Then he said to them, then render to Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and to God the things that are God's. And hearing this, they were amazed, and leaving him, they went away.
We don't have any illusions about the Roman government as being a pagan government, do we? They worshiped Caesar. It was an idolatrous nation. Caesar claimed to be a god, but taxes were due. And Jesus said, render to Caesar the things that are Caesar's. If that's not clear enough, let's hear Romans 13:1-2.
Let every soul be subject unto the higher powers. For there is no power but God. The powers that be or are ordained of God. Whosoever therefore resisteth the power resisteth the ordinance of God, and they that resist shall receive to themselves damnation.
Once more, this passage is about the Roman government. This is Paul's letter to the church in Rome. And he is telling them to be subject to their governing authorities, and that no authority exists except that they have their authority from God. And in this case, he says that that they have been instituted by God. That to resist the authorities is to that God has appointed is to resist God Himself.
Babylonian.
Pardon me?
I was just thinking of the Babylonian.
Explain.
God raised them up to come and attack.
Yeah.
And to be the authority of the time and enslaving at that time.
Yeah.
And then just the unique relationship with King Nebuchadnezzar.
Yeah.
Just an interesting, relationship.
Yeah. If you're like me, then hearing passages like this, your mind probably immediately begins to think of the disclaimers. Well, surely that wouldn't be the case if this happened. Surely it wouldn't be the case if this happened. And before you go there, I want you to stop and recognize again that God is the one who has ordered His creation to have relationships of what our catechism calls superior and inferiors. That doesn't mean you're lesser of a person, remember, but of those in authority and those under authority. And that it really, lots of different types of that happening all over your life, and that those relationships are ones that a Christian needs to recognize that order comes from God, and that you should not lightly throw that off. And in fact, our default should be to honor the authority that God has set over us, and to not rush to the disclaimers or the places where those are, where things go badly. The way the author Smith puts it, according to Paul, resisting authority is dangerous because it is actually resisting God. When you criticize authority, you're criticizing the God who placed that leadership over you. You're deliberately taking a dangerous position. As I said, I think you will probably have thought of places where you need to take other action. If you're required to sin, if you are told to do something illegal or immoral, that you obey God rather than men. What I'm urging you to do, though, is to take a step back and to examine your attitudes towards authority, and the way in which you approach them, and your responses to authority. And in the coming weeks, we're going to be thinking especially about your our responses to authority, even when that authority is in error, in the nicest sense, or is sinning against you, how it is that we can respond to that, and how it is that we can respond in a Christian fashion to that. So next week we'll look at how to change the way you think, and then some of our actions in response to that. Before we close, I will ask for questions, and I'm going to ask Bridget to repeat her two questions so that everyone else can hear them, because they were good questions.
My first question was, do we extrapolate from Scripture and say that all women should submit to all men? And the second one was the relationship. Does the relationship between the husband and wife serve as a witness to non-believers about the relationship between Christ and the church and Christ and the Father?
First question, just to make sure that was the answer was understood there. Her question was, is the Bible teaching that women in general must submit to men in general? In other words, every woman to every man, whoever they might be. The answer is no. And the direction that Paul gives is concerning wives and their husbands. It's that relationship specifically that is being spoken of there. So it's a good question. People have made mistakes over that before and have said that women in general should be under the authority of men in general. That's not a biblical position. Second question was, and I like the reference that you made to the Truth Project. The Truth Project speaks about how we see patterns in the world that teach us something of God. And in this case, there is something that we learn of God by observing the relationship between husband and wife. And that's part of that really fun thing that Paul is doing by saying, husbands and wives, you should be like Christ in the church. And by the way, if you look at husbands and wives, you can learn something about Christ in the church. It's part of that pattern that that is in the universe. Let me open it up and ask if you have other questions or comments related to this.